from the trenches.
I'm here with Shelley Cable, Senior Consultant, PwC in the Indigenous Consulting Business. Shelley, how are you?
Hey, I'm very well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So, big year for you, where you're heading to Wacoa as a keynote speaker. So thank you for joining us for the 5 in 5. Just start off with a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So my name is Shelley Cable. I'm a Noongar woman from Southwest Australia, so Indigenous to the Southwest region of WA. So my family comes from a small town called Narrogin, which is 2 hours inland from Perth. I've been born and raised in Perth most of my life, been living in Canberra for the last 18 months and working for PwC's Indigenous Consulting.
Wow. And PwC have an Indigenous Consulting business, a whole business. Can you tell us what that business does and how it came about?
Yeah, definitely. It's quite a history-making joint venture. So it's the first time internationally that PwC has taken a minority stake in a business that has, you know, stood up. So PIC, or PwC Indigenous Consulting, is a joint venture between PwC Australia, who own 49% of the business, and then we have two Aboriginal CEOs who collectively own the other 51%. So we are technically a separate business to PwC. We have our own CEOs and our own ABN. And we're roughly, so we're the largest and leading Indigenous consultancy in Australia. We have approximately 60 staff around the country. So
wow.
It's a small business within PwC making a big impact.
Wow. And what kind of work does that team do?
A whole range. So we offer the full suite of professional services. The way I personally describe it is that we consult in Indigenous affairs, and it's every bit as broad as that sounds. So I've worked at PIC for almost 18 months now and been across things like native title, English literacy, economic development, unemployment or employment, procurement, human rights, like you name it, we do it. So it's been a big learning experience and lots of fun just to get dropped into a whole heap of different scenarios.
Awesome. That sounds amazing. Tell us a little bit about the representation that the Indigenous community have in accounting. I was surprised when I found out the numbers a few years ago. So maybe just to give the listeners a little bit of paint a picture on what role they play in accounting.
Yeah, so unfortunately not a big one at this point. So there's roughly 200,000 qualified accountants in Australia, and of that, there's 39 Indigenous accountants.
39. Now, we haven't made a mistake, just for the listeners, that 39 on 200,000.
Correct. So that is pretty much the reason for my existence at this point in my life, is the fact that I'm not okay with that number. So I'm studying my CPA at the moment to make it at least 40. I've heard good news that there's roughly 40 or 50 of us Indigenous students who are on the path to becoming qualified. So hopefully that number will at least double in the next 3 to 4 years. We're nowhere near where it needs to be.
And as for the listeners, I guess as a percentage of the community at large, I think the Indigenous population is about 3%.
Yeah, correct.
Cool, great. And so the obviously accounting is well under that.
Yeah.
Now, we spoke a little bit about speaking at Wacoa. So you must be looking forward to that. Can you tell us a little bit about your topic and how you feel that the opportunity for people attending Wacoa?
Yeah, well, I'm very, very excited and very humbled to be speaking at Wacoa this year in Sydney. So I'll be presenting on financial literacy, which is one of my core passions. Financial literacy, mostly amongst Indigenous Australians, but also for the broader community. I think it's such an important topic in Australia, not one that we talk about enough and not one that we pay enough attention to. I think back, you know, to my economics and finance degree, and I think I learned all about this, you know, investment finance and investment banking and things like that. And yet I'm still having to teach myself about my personal financial literacy in terms of super and watch bank accounts, like what is a good interest rate these days. I think I can change that. So I'm trying to see what I can do. But also particularly amongst Indigenous Australians, to shine a spotlight on the current state of affairs. So you'll be aware of the Banking Royal Commission at the moment.
Most people, yes.
As most of the listeners would be. And so there's been quite a focus in the commission around Indigenous financial services and, well, and discrimination and preying essentially on Indigenous consumers. And for me, the way that we can stop that is by increasing education in the form of financial literacy. So for me, financial literacy is a tool of empowerment. With only 39 Indigenous accountants, if you know the dollars that the government alone spends on Indigenous communities, it is, you know, astronomical. It's $33 billion last year with a B, $33 billion. And then you compare that to 39 Indigenous accountants. And it's really clear to understand that there are not enough Indigenous accountants deciding where that money goes, and not enough of that money makes it to the ground. It's not making the impact that it should and that it needs to. So for me, it's about promoting financial literacy and Indigenous people in accounting.
And when you speak about financial literacy in the Indigenous community, what are some of the challenges? Is it educational? Is it remoteness? Is it a mixture? And I suppose, so if you'd like, just, yeah, maybe tell us a little bit about the challenges and how we've found ourselves, I guess, here.
Yeah, definitely. It's a very complex issue, and there's a whole range of reasons. Some of the really practical things is, like, a lot of Indigenous mob, especially in remote areas, don't have ID. And so how do you access the financial industry or services without that? That's just one example of a very practical thing.
Wow.
But there's a lot of historical reasons as well. So you'll be aware of the Stolen Generations, which occurred in the 1900s. And not so well known aspect of the Stolen Generations were the stolen wages that went along with that. So during Stolen Gen, people were sent out, you know, to be domestics and farmhands, and they earned an income for that. But that money wasn't paid to them. It was paid to the government to manage on their behalf. So Indigenous Australians today are one of the first generations in our family not to earn an income, but to earn and receive and have to manage that income on our own. So there's an aspect of intergenerational knowledge that goes along with financial, well, and managing money, which is new to us. So I think I'm the fifth generation in my family to actually have that experience managing an income. So that's one of the big issues. And the other one that I think is pretty big is how money and how accounting and corporates broadly are perceived in Indigenous communities. So, you know, if we take mining as an example, mining is driven by money, as is most corporates, to be fair. And the impact that that's had on Indigenous communities it's resulted in impacts to the environment. And so for a lot of people, corporates and money is associated with greed and with taking. And so lots of people don't want any part of that. And I can totally understand that. Where I come from, like, my point of view is that you need to be in it to be able to change it, and money doesn't necessarily have to correlate with greed. And if you're in that space, you get to decide what money does. So the more people that we have changing what money does in our communities, the better.
That's amazing, I suppose, and I certainly didn't, and a lot of people wouldn't understand the concept that the Stolen Generation did not have to manage their money. You know, that's obviously a massive thing, because I think all of us learn when we're growing up.
That's right.
I mean, the concept of pocket money, you know, if we're lucky enough to have it, even if it's not about the size of it, but it certainly does teach you those lessons. And without it, and certainly when your grandparents never had it and are against it, that's amazing.
And that's the thing. So I'm the fifth generation in my family to manage an income. That's quite a large number. Like, I'm one of the rare exceptions that have had that practice. Both my mum and my dad, my dad's Indigenous, worked in a bank, which is where they actually met. And so, like, even for my dad to work in a bank as an Indigenous Australian back in those days was so rare. So I know that I'm in a very privileged position to have had that education passed down to me in the home, and that's what I'm hoping to share.
And it's amazing, because that knowledge doesn't just appear again in generations. There must be a massive lag effect, because, you know, that financial knowledge grows through generations.
Right.
And when it's starting from scratch.
And not only, like, knowledge, but also wealth. Like, wealth is passed down generations and, you know, intergenerational wealth. We don't have a whole lot of that. So there's a lot more conversations starting to happen now around financial literacy and intergenerational wealth and wealth building for the Indigenous nation, which I'm really excited to see. But, yeah, we're just at the beginning.
Wow. And last question. You spoke at the UN, the United Nations. For most of us, I suppose that's something that we wouldn't even dream of. But you achieved it at, I think, 19?
No, not 19,
22.
22,
close enough.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about what that was like?
Yeah, so it was about this time last year, so just over 12 months ago. Before I was asked to go by the Australian government, also it was just something that I'd never even considered as an option to do. It was not on my radar. So I went to the expert, so there's a lot of sittings of the UN and lots of different versions of that. I went to the expert mechanism on the rights of Indigenous peoples. So that's held every year in July in Geneva. And so the expert mechanism is a bunch of human rights experts and legal experts who then go and write a report on a particular topic for that year. Last year happened to focus on Indigenous business and access to financial services, which is the first time in the history of MRIP, which is shortened to, that it's taken that kind of focus. Usually it's the more traditional areas of human rights that we know about, but human rights through economic development and human rights through business are such interesting concepts. And absolutely. So they prepared a draft report on what the barriers and success factors were in allowing that for Indigenous people around the world. And when I read it, I got butterflies in my stomach, that draft report, because we were allowed to comment on it publicly and present a statement. And one of the words that wasn't mentioned anywhere was financial literacy. And so I realised then that I actually could make a contribution to the UN. So the next day, that night, I went home and prepared for a three-minute statement like I've never prepared for a three-minute statement in my life, and realised that this is the contribution that I can have at an international level. So I presented at my first time at the UN the importance of financial literacy and the Australian context and the reasons why we find ourselves in the situation we're in now. My recommendations that states or governments should focus more on financial literacy as a method of expressing human rights was officially endorsed by the UN, and they actually amended their draft report, their final report, to include my recommendations. So that was, quite an empowering feeling to know that, at 22, I could have that impact at an international level and in an area that I was so passionate about, and then to be able to draw the links between business, financial literacy and human rights was just an incredible combination that's inspired me now to keep doing what I'm doing.
That's amazing. That at 22.
It was cool.
Where to from here? Well, good luck. Shelley, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks again for listening to another episode of From the Trenches. David and I love hearing feedback from all of our listeners. If you ever have any content, feel free to reach out. I can be reached at Paul Meissner on LinkedIn or on Twitter at Fiveways Group.
I'm on Twitter at David Boyar, B-O-Y-A-R, on LinkedIn, David Boyar.
From the Trenches.